Hey, I'm Paul.
And I'm Christian.
Welcome to I'm Dying to Tell You, inspiration shared by our mom who is dying from ALS.
There is no cure for our mom or anyone else with ALS. But right now, she's on a mission to find and share stories of inspiration.
Coming to you from Cincinnati, Ohio, we're happy to introduce the one lady we both love since the first day we laid eyes on her. The queen of the Queen City, our mom, your host, Lori.
Hello, I'm Lori, your host of I'm Dying to Tell You. Thank you for being here. Welcome if you are chiming in for the very first time. And thank you so much for coming back if you have listened in before. I really appreciate you being here and just being a part of this very special podcast community. Okay, today is a host ask me anything episode. I've had a lot of requests to do this again, so I have a lot of questions that have come in from all of you, and in this episode, I'm going to answer them or as many as I can within about 40 minutes. And if I don't get to them all, I will save them and do them in a future episode. So I really appreciate you sending in the questions. And yeah, all right, so let's get started. Okay, actually, let me start by giving a very top-line explanation of why I'm doing this podcast. Okay, so I was diagnosed with ALS, a fatal disease that doesn't have a cure, when I was 38 in 2004, so 19 years ago. I was told I had 2 to 5 years to live. I've been very lucky, and that my progression is very slow. And when I hit my 15-year mark living with ALS, I was overwhelmed with the urge to figure out what I should do with this extra time. And I knew I wanted to share stories of inspiration that lift me up, that keep me going, and the podcast came on my heart. And I never really understood it because at that time, I had been using an amplifier to talk when I was tired or in a large group. I was like, why am I gonna do a podcast that, you know, where my voice is changing and declining? But anyway, I came to realize that it wouldn't have to be perfect at all. It was all about the message. So I learned how to do it on my own, and I have been identifying people that I want to share with you, preparing for the interview, recording, editing, all with one finger. So anyway, and here I am 4 years later, continuing to do it because it fills me up in such a way and blesses me every single day. And I love seeing that it touches so many others as well, no matter what they're going through. So, and the questions that have come in are kind of all over the board, but they're about my outlook in life, about living with a fatal disease that doesn't have a cure, about my longevity living with ALS after I was told I had 2 to 5 years to live, and here I am in year 19, about family and friends and any advice that I have for other people. So, okay, let's get started. Let's start with the questions about my ALS, and that'll be a good kind of starting point if people are not familiar with ALS or my journey. Okay, first question. Oh, it says, first of all, you're an inspiration. You are the one that made me want to do my own podcast. And the question is, what's your progression like with ALS? ALS can look different on everyone, and it does. Where it starts, how it progresses, the rate of progression definitely is different. So mine started in my hand. I couldn't open up a water bottle, and I had lost muscle mass in between my thumb and my forefinger. So I have very little strength, almost none, in my hands, in my fingers. Some of them are curled up 24/7. The ones that move have very, very little strength. So my hands, my arms, my shoulders, a lot of muscle loss. So to lift my arms, I can position them upward, but I cannot lift them up. I have a very weak diaphragm. It's operating at about 40%, but it has been that way for about 4 years now. So very grateful for that. And my legs are pretty good. There's a little bit of atrophy I can see, but pretty good. So, yeah. So that's what it looks like. And the progression itself has been consistent, but slow. I'm not going to mention who sent in all of the questions because I didn't say that I would do that. And I don't want to put anyone on the spot. But that question came from James Smith. And I know he won't mind because he started a podcast after seeing mine and listening in. He's in the UK and it's called Beyond MND. His name is James. MND stands for motor neuron disease, which is the same thing as ALS. So anyway, if you want to check it out, it's called Beyond MND. All right, next question. Oh, same thing. What changes have you seen? The next question is, what are the biggest struggles you face on a daily basis? Oh, you know, there are many, but they are small. So I think I would rather look at it as an obstacle instead of a struggle. Yeah, they're small. You know, anything that you do with your hands that is like a fine motor thing. You know, if I know I want something to drink, I'm going to have my husband open them, you know, open a bottle or open a water bottle before he leaves so that when I want it, I know it's there and I can get to it. Not, you know, don't put the cap on too tight. I am lucky to have an accessible home that we designed 10 years ago when I was, you know, I already had ALS. So a lot of things are in place for me so that I don't have to reach up. The microwave, my closet, the shelving and the racks are right at the same level that my arms are without having to reach. I do a lot of simple meals, and I might eat Chick-fil-A a lot. To cut anything, open anything, a jar, a pouch, is extremely frustrating. And with just the two of us, my husband and I, it's a lot easier to either keep it simple, have him cook, or go out. I have had ALS for so long. I have learned how to work with it. My small little obstacles could depend on the day and how much energy I have and what I'm doing. I really try not to say no. So if I'm with a friend and they want to go walk around and I don't know how long or I don't know how far we're going to go, I take my walker. It gives me a peace of mind, and I can also move faster when I have my walker. So I feel like I kind of am starting to slow people down if I don't have it. So if I'm in a large group and I know we're going to be on the move, I take my walker. But in the scheme of things, I just call them little annoying ALS obstacles, you know, because they're small. All right, on to another question. What brings you the greatest sense of comfort? Okay, that's deep. Having my tribe with me. Having my people close. Yeah, no matter what. No matter what. No matter what's going on. No matter what we're doing. My inner peace is fueled when I'm connected spiritually, when I'm connected with my friends and my family. Yeah, for sure. Okay, this question. It seems you have lost a lot of friends lately. How does this affect you? Well, obviously, it's heartbreaking. It definitely takes me down. It is gut-wrenching. It's frustrating and extremely sad. But I will say that it has never caused me to give up. It has never caused me to not wanna speak up and speak out and fight for those that are still living with ALS. And it does fuel my fight. When I'm tired and I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do this podcast, or I don't know how I'm going to deliver on something I volunteered to do in the ALS community, it makes me find a way to find the time and the strength and the energy to do whatever I can. I see people alongside of me doing it every single day, and it's not easy, and I know that, and I appreciate and I admire others that are continuing to be an active part of the fight because they have a situation where they're able to do that, and not everyone is. And so I'm so grateful to be here and to do that. To me, that's a way that I can honor my friends. I have a platform that I can even continue to talk about them and to share them with other people that I talk to. So anyway, I hope that makes sense. I mention this a lot, but I'm looking at it right now. I have a wall to the right of me, and it has photos of me and friends that we have lost to ALS, and it has a big angel wing above it. Angel wings above it. A beautiful cross in the middle. I look at them every day. All right, here is one. Do you think exercising has helped you living with ALS? Yeah, I do. When I was first diagnosed, I was told by a very well-known neurologist, do not exercise. Do not exercise. He said, if you do, you're going to burn motor neurons that eventually you'll need to walk. So of course that scared me, and of course that made me stop exercising. I was very active when I was diagnosed. I was doing aerobics, or I think it was jazzercise, and I've always been very, very active. So I quit doing everything. I think it was 6 months, a year later, I felt so bad from not moving. And I'm small, small frame. I had gained 20 pounds. And on me, that was a lot. I could feel it. And at that point, I decided I would do whatever I wanted to do at a very safe rate and in a very safe manner. So at the time I was going to jazzercise, I went back and I stood in the back and I held on to the bar, did whatever I could. I just modified it. I didn't care that I looked different, that I wasn't doing it exactly. And I have continued to have that approach for the past 19 years. So in my own little mind, yes, I think exercise has helped me. I know it's helped me mentally. And so here's my little thought. And I'm not a doctor. I'm not a neurologist. I'm not a scientist. I'm just talking from experience. My whole thought on exercise is when your mobility changes and your muscle loss occurs, you quit doing things because it's harder, it's not safe, and it's tiring. But how much of the muscle loss is because you haven't moved, and how much of the muscle loss is specifically caused from ALS? So like for me, I can't lift my arms, but I haven't lifted my arms in 20 years. So are there muscles within there that could improve if I find a way to exercise them? Are there muscles within there that are atrophied only because they haven't been used? So I am continuously working on that and measuring that and trying different things to see, does it make a difference? A perfect example is I had found that I really wasn't moving as much as I typically would, because during the podcast, it puts me in a chair, sitting down and not moving. So I had decided earlier this year, I went doing this 400-mile bike ride using a trike and adapted so that I can use the gears and I would have an assist to help me. I had noticed that looking down at my legs, they were really a lot more atrophied from sitting down. And after I had completed my 400 miles over a couple months, that I could feel and see a little bit of definition on my legs that wasn't there before. So that kind of proved to me that in that instance, that was a use it or lose it situation and not related to ALS at all. Okay. That was a long answer. this question. What's the top three things that you are taking or doing that you believe most contributes to your slow progression? Okay, first of all, I think I'm just a slow progressor. That's just the type of ALS that I have. However, when people ask me that question, I always say, when I sleep, I sleep. When I'm up, I'm up. I'm up and I'm moving. 90% of the time, I sleep at least 9 hours a night, usually 10. I am a night owl, so I'm typically up until 1, and I sleep till 11, somewhere around that. But when I'm awake, I'm moving. I do sit down and take breaks here and there, but I'm moving around and I'm very active. Also, when I'm sleeping 10 hours, I have a full face mask on with my non-invasive ventilator. So I'm getting really good quality sleep by sleeping with that ventilator every night and 10 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours using it. Okay, another question, why are you so slow? Like I said, I think I really am just a slow case. Okay, here's one. I actually had a few people ask this very question, which is, how do you handle survivor's guilt? And one listener said, I am also a slow progressor, and I feel awkward meeting people who are faster progressors because I don't know how they might feel about it. I definitely have experienced survivor's guilt. I mean, especially living 19 years, I really, really have. However, I feel differently about it now than I used to. I mean, I used to really shy away from going to our local ALS support group because I felt like maybe other people would look at me and say, why are you here? Kind of thing. You know, my challenges or obstacles aren't near what they might be going through. But over the years, that's actually changed, even though it could be greater because I've been living that much longer. But there are a lot of times now where I see it that me having it for so long can provide hope for others who are going through it, especially those that are just diagnosed. And I actually find myself feeling different depending on who I'm with, what stage they're in, and all that. You know, maybe I'm with someone who is in the final stages of ALS in life, and I might feel like I'm not bringing them much hope, but I can let them know that I will continue to fight in their memory, and I can share with them what they mean to me and what I have learned from them. And I can also let them know how I will be one of those people who can continue to keep their spirit alive, to talk about them, to reassure them that they will not be forgotten. I know exactly what you mean. I have definitely struggled with this over the years. That's where I'm at right now. Great question, though, really. All right, I have a couple questions about supplements and medications that I'm on. I am not on anything crazy. I do some daily supplements, vitamin E, CoQ10, multivitamin, calcium, selenium. But other than that, I quit taking Rylantec or Rizol the first FDA drug that was approved. I quit taking that about 10 years ago because I was so nervous about what it would do to my liver. I never intended that I would be taking that for so long. And I'm not on any other ALS medication. Okay, here's a question about my tribe. What is your tribe like? Okay, I'm married to my husband, Paul, who is amazing. And we have two sons, Paul and Christian, which you hear at the beginning and the ending of this podcast. Man, when I was diagnosed, they were 12 and 13, and now they are 30 and 32. Oh my gosh. And Paul, the oldest, is engaged to a beautiful young lady, Melissa. So on 5/25/25, she will officially become a part of my tribe. And they don't live here. I'm in Ohio. My oldest son lives in New York. My youngest in Austin. But we get together often. We stay connected very well. We play games over Zoom. I text them goodnight every single night, and they usually respond in the morning because I'm the one up the latest, but they're great. They make every effort to get together whenever we can, so seeing them and having them all together is definitely my happiest place. I just did two episodes about tough conversations, and I had a question come in. What have been some tough conversations around ALS, and definitely that was telling the boys when they were in middle school that I had a disease that typically takes the lives of someone in just 2 to 5 years. I literally couldn't speak. I was just crying and my husband was doing all the talking. But that first initial conversation, definitely the hardest thing ever. And you can hear more about that and others' experience on that in the prior two episodes to this one. Next question. Do you worry about becoming a burden to anyone in particular? Honestly, I don't. I think that right now I am so aware of what it takes to care for someone in later stages that I feel like I'll be proactive in getting help that is needed, getting things in place to make sure that whoever is taking care of me can do it in a healthy way. Okay, here's a question. What hopes do you have for your family? My number one hope for my family now and in the future when I'm gone would be that they follow their heart, that they live with purpose, and that they always, always put in the effort, put in the time, put in the energy to stay connected no matter where they are. Okay, here's a question about Outlook. How are you consistently one of the most positive people I've ever known? What drives you on that positive path? Everything I do is driven by my faith. I thank God that I have a perspective where I can focus on what's good, what I can still do, the light in the middle of the darkness, all that. I know how important perspective is, and I also know that when my kids were 12 and 13, when I was diagnosed, that I knew even then that they would be witnessing and they would be learning by watching me handle the biggest dose of adversity that you can imagine, and that they would be more equipped to handle their own adversity when it came their way. So I keep that in mind. I feel like seeing me and my approach in life can encourage them in some way, and hopefully others. Okay, here's a question. When people think about you, what would you like them to remember most? At the end of every podcast episode, I say, you are loved and not alone. I hope the people that know me really feel that I said something or did something to truly make them feel that way, that they are loved and never alone. Okay, this is hard. Okay, I'm going to try not to cry. Okay, here's a lighter question about the podcast. How do you find your guest? A lot of different ways. My guest might be someone I know. It might be someone that I met and follow on social media. Or a guest could come from introduction from you. So if you know of anyone and you follow them, you stay connected with someone that really lifts you up and is an inspiration for others, let me know. Shoot me a note, send me a private message, however you want. I'd love to hear about it. All right, next question is, what advice do you have for someone that was recently diagnosed with ALS? My advice would be to connect with at least one other person that has ALS that is going through the same thing that you are. I've done over 80 episodes and talked to a lot of people. Getting connected is the number one thing that is most common amongst everyone living with ALS, as far as what they would also tell other people who are just diagnosed. ALS robs you of so much that it can be isolating in so many ways. And I really do believe that community is healing. And I'm not saying take away ALS, but it really can heal your heart and help you navigate this terrible disease. It really can. Even connecting with one other person is what I would suggest. Okay, next question. What advice have you received that has made the greatest impact on your life, and who gave you this advice? Well, I would definitely say my parents at a very young age. And, you know, they didn't sit me down and say, I have this great advice for you. But for example, my dad always told me and always instilled in me that I can do whatever I set my heart on, that I was capable of doing anything. And my mom, she showed me that I have it within me to be a fighter, even if I couldn't solve something, that there was a way to make it better. There was a way to work with any obstacle at all. Before my mom passed, she used to say, You got it. You got it. You got it. Oh, and I have that on my wall now in the gym. Okay, we're getting there. This question, what's on your bucket list? I've never really had an official bucket list ever. My greatest desires and things that I really dream about are new experiences with my family. And one thing that I want to do that we've never done is I would love to do an RV trip out west. And the other thing I would love to do is I would love to combine travel and new experience with service. I would love it if it could work out where we all traveled together and went and served people that really needed our love and our attention. So, yeah, a couple of things I'm thinking about how to make happen and when. Okay, these questions are really good and hard. And every time I do it, I'm like, I really like being the one asking the questions. No, you guys are great. Thank you for taking the time to think about the questions and send them in. I really appreciate it. Okay, I actually got this question. If you listen in, you know, at the end of every podcast, I ask, what are you dying to tell us? So someone wrote in and asked me, what are you dying to tell us? So I'm dying to tell you, just keep going, no matter what. Go forward. I heard something the other day, I can't even remember where, but it stuck with me. Make a plan instead of excuses. Ah, I was like, oh my gosh, I love that so much. I've really learned that there's so much that we cannot control, but yet there's a lot that we can control, even if it's our thoughts. We can control that, and we have a choice in how we do. Thank you again for listening in, for sending in the questions, and for being in this amazing community. I can't thank you enough. Hey, if you like this podcast and you want to help share it with other people, one way to do that is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps let other people know that it's worth listening in and checking it out. So thank you if you take a minute and do that. I really appreciate it. I would love to connect with you. If you are on social media, you can find me pretty much everywhere on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and even TikTok, all at I'm Dying to Tell You podcast. Okay, until next time, know you are loved and not alone. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to our mom. Make sure to visit her website at imdyingtotellyoupodcast.com, where you'll find photos and show notes about this episode. If you liked the show, please subscribe to the podcast and share it with a friend. Thank you. We'll be right back.